The Kedushas Levi mentions the following idea, which I am going to expand upon greatly. He says that the significance of Tu B'Shvat and Tu B'Av is the following. There is an argument in the Gemara when exactly the world was created. One opinion, Rabbi Yoshua, says the world was created in Nisan. And the other opinion, Rabbi Lezer, is that the world was created in Tishrei. We know that the world wasn't really created in Tishrei or Nisan, according to either of them, but rather man was created the first day of Tishrei or the first day of Nisan. That means the world was created 6 days earlier, either on the 25th day of Elul or the 25th day of Adar. Okay, this year it doesn't happen to work out, we'll see, because it's a leap year. But in a normal year, the creation of the world was either on the 25th day of Adar or the 25th day of Nisan, of Elul. If you subtract 40 days from the 25th day of Elul, you get the 15th day of Av. If you subtract 40 days from the 25th day of Adar, you get Tu B'Shvat. What's the significance of subtracting 40 days? It says that 40 days before a child is conceived, they already declare in the heavens who that child's going to marry, and many of the things that have to do with that person are decreed 40 days before. Therefore, makes sense to say that 40 days before the world was conceived, also you start preparing for that creation. So the 15th day of Shvat prepares for the creation of Nisan, and the 15th day of Av prepares for the creation of Tishrei. Tosfos explains that really both are true, and the world was created twice. Once on the mental level, the machshava, it was created in Tishrei, and Lemaisa, it was created in Nisan. That doesn't mean that the world was created actually twice. Once God imagined it, and then he actually did it. It's not what it means. What it means is the following, I think. That it says in the very first Rashi in the Torah, the second Rashi, that God originally intended to create the world, the Midas HaDin, that there should only be total judgment, justice. And that would be the ideal, because the whole purpose of this world is that a person should be able to earn his share in the world to come and not get it on a silver platter. God could have created the world to come and given it out for free, but he knew that people would not appreciate it. It wouldn't be the total reward if they didn't earn it. So God put us in this physical world to earn the world to come. Therefore, the less help you get, the better it is. So if you earn it totally, without any extra help, no mercy, you get exactly what you deserve, and you can exist like that, that's the best thing. And there were great people who existed like that. Yaakov Avinu asked God that he have no mercy. That's why he led such a difficult life. But whatever he earned in this world, he got totally on his own. So his Olam Haba is perfect, complete. Even though he had to suffer a lot in this world too. Rabbi Akiva was another one on that level. That he was able to exist with total judgment. So he was punished very harshly for the small sins that he did. And he died al Kiddush Hashem. In a very painful death. What could have been a painful death. So it says that when a person makes up his mind to die al Kiddush Hashem, the pain doesn't exist anymore. Such a Kabbalah from Kedoshim, from people who died on Kiddush Hashem. In any case, but it was what could have been a painful death. They said that Akiva was smiling when he died, happy that he was able to mekayim the pasuk v'yohavtos Hashem Elokecha b'chol nafshecha. So Rabbi Akiva lived like that, and his olam haba is totally earned without any help, without any mercy. But God saw that most human beings could not survive. We'd lose everything if we depended totally on judgment and justice and no mercy. So God added mercy, lamaisa, to the world for the sake of most human beings. But there are individuals that could live according to God's original plan. The original plan is called the creation of thought, because that's what God originally thought. And that is the level of din. The lamaisa, the actuality was that God added rachamim. And that is the level, the creation of lamaisa, which is the world where, which includes mercy. Now originally, these were not two separate times, because there was no time. There were two dimensions. The world was created on two dimensions. The dimension of din, and the dimension of rachamim. When God created time, the dimension of din became associated with the time called Tishrei, and the dimension of rachamim became associated with the time called Nisan. That's what it means that the world was created both times, one in thought and one in action. Not that there was a creation at two different times. There was a creation on two different dimensions, which later became associated with different times that the world has. Now, both of these times of creation, the creation of din and the creation of rachamim, and the 40-day period before them, which is the 15th of Av and the 15th of Shvat, both of them have to do with trees. The 15th of Shvat is obvious. It's the Rosh Hashanah of trees. The 15th of Av, according to one opinion, the Yontif of the 15th of Av is because they stopped cutting trees to use the wood on the Mizbeach on that day. Because until that date, the summer sun is very hot and dries out all the wood. And there's no sap. If there's no sap, then there can't be worms. And wormy wood is invalid to be used on the Mizbeach. So all summer they cut wood to be used on the Mizbeach, knowing that there were no worms in the wood. But after Tu B'Av, the sun starts to get weaker, the nights start to get longer, and then it's possible that there'll be sap in the wood, won't be dried out completely, and there'll be worms, and they stop cutting wood at that point. So the end of cutting wood for the Mizbeach was on the 15th. That was a seal of that mitzvah. So both of them have to do with trees. Let's discuss first the concept of the 15th of Av. And then we'll see in contrast the 15th of Shvat. The 15th of Av prepares for the Rosh Hashanah of Din, the Rosh Hashanah of Judgment, Tishrei. Tishrei represents judgment. In many ways, it's the day of judgment. Yom HaDin is Rosh Hashanah. In addition, the name Tishrei represents judgment. How so? Whenever you have the Aleph Beis in order, it represents rachamim. The Aleph Beis backwards is din. Tishrei is Tav Shin Resh, the Aleph Beis backwards. Nisan is Chodesh Ha'aviv, Aleph Beis, is the Aleph Beis forward. So one is the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim, and the other is Rosh Hashanah of Din. How do you prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Din? By cutting down trees and burning them on the Mizbeah. Now what's the symbolism? The Gemara says that human beings are compared to trees. Ha'adam eitz hasada. Man is like the tree. The word eitz refers to the configuration of the tree itself, the wood of the tree, not its fruit, but the wood itself. That's why Eitzim also means firewood. even after it's dead and cut down, still called Eitzim. So the Eitz is the tree itself, not its fruit-bearing qualities, but the tree itself. The word Eitz hints to us, I think, that if you look at a tree, you'll be able to understand what a tzaddik is. How so? What are the letters that make up Eitz? Ayin, tzaddik. And even though it's not tzaddik, it's tzaddi, but the Gemara says that the tzaddi represents the tzaddik. So ayin tzaddi means look and you'll see a tzaddik. So if you look at a tree, you'll understand what a tzaddik is. And how is that? So the Maharal Miprag says, L'chora, people are not like trees. They're upside down. If you look at a person with his arms spread out and his legs spread out, so he looks like a tree only if you put him on his head. The person standing on his head, he looks like a tree. If he's standing on his limbs, he looks like an upside down tree. What does that tell me about a tzaddik? It tells me the following. Why is a person upside down? Why is the tree's roots in the ground and the person's roots are facing up? This is our roots. We have root hairs on our root, which is our head. Our head is the place where our seichel and neshama is. Because we are not rooted in the physical world. We are rooted in the spiritual world. So our root faces up towards the heavens. Whereas a physical tree is rooted in the ground. But the ground for us is the heavens. So a person really looks like a tree. But you have to understand what the root is and what the limbs are. By a human being, the root is his head. And therefore it faces heavenward. By a tree, the root is a physical root. Therefore it's embedded in the ground. It would follow, therefore, that if a person would be not in this physical world, but he'd be in a spiritual world, then he would be on his head. That's the normal position of a person if it wouldn't be that we're in the physical world. Because we're in the physical world, we stand on our limbs and our root faces upwards towards the spiritual. But if we'd be in a spiritual world, we'd be like a tree. The root on the bottom and the limbs on top. And I found that that is the case. Not that I was there to see, even though we all were there, but we forgot, and I also forgot. But there's a medrash that says that openly. The medrash is in Paneach Raza in Parshas Chayisara. It says that when Rivka Inenu first saw Yitzchak, her bridegroom, she fell off the camel. Something astounded her. Says the medrash, what astounded her was the following. After the Akedah, Yitzchak Avinu's neshama had fled his body when Avram was ready to shecht him. And he died. And God resurrected him. And it says at that moment, the Malachim made the bracha Mechaya Nesim, which we say in Shemona Esrei, in the second bracha, which corresponds to Yitzchak. So Yitzchak died and he was resurrected. So he needed to be rehabilitated. So God took him away. It says that Avram went back with his two helpers, Eliezer and Yishmael, but it doesn't say Yitzchak was there. So the Medrash says that Yitzchak was taken away into Gan Eden for 3 years to be rehabilitated. When he exited Gan Eden was the exact moment that Rivka saw him. He was just walking out of Gan Eden. Okay, that dimension. And as is well known, says the Medrash, in Gan Eden people walk on their heads. And Yitzchak didn't have time yet to get back on his feet, and he was walking on his head, and when the Kala saw that her chassan walks on his head, she fell off the camel. I once wanted to say, why did she do that? She was a good wife. She wanted to be like her husband, so she wanted to fall on her head too, so she could walk on her head. So that medrash is clear that in the Olam HaEmes people walk on their heads. Another source is when they brought up Shmuel HaNavi, the witch that Shaul brought up Shmuel, he came up upside down. And some say that's because in the Olam HaEmes people walk upside down. Another thing, a little bit more into this world again, that you can understand with all of this is the following. That if you want to maintain in this world a spiritual posture, a plant, okay, the limbs are uncovered and the root is covered. Okay, the root is in the ground or in a pot and the limbs are uncovered. That's the normal, and you know that the limbs are limbs that can expand, and the root is covered because that's the main thing. We live in a physical world, so our root is up, but our limbs are down. But it makes us look like our root is our limbs. So how would you make it clear that this is the root, not our legs? Our legs that are firmly planted on the ground are only the limb. They're not the main thing. The physical side of man is not the main thing. The main thing is his spiritual side. That's really the root. And that's rooted in the heavens. How would you depict or show that this is my root and those are my limbs? So you'd cover your head and you'd uncover your feet. To show, what? To show that your limbs are limbs and your root is what's covered. That's what we do on Yom Kippur. We do it when we're mourning. A mourner covers his head and uncovers his feet, doesn't wear shoes. On Yom Kippur we don't wear shoes. A chalitza, when a man refuses to marry his sister-in-law, the man whose brother died without children, so the woman takes off his shoe. What's the common denominator of all these things? The common denominator is that we want to maintain a spiritual posture. On Yom Kippur, we want to be more like in the spiritual world. So we uncover our feet, and we cover our head, and we show this is the root, that's only the limb. A person who's mourning, one of the ideas of mourning is to commiserate together with the soul. The soul is going through a difficult transition period, so we want to, misery loves company. So we want to commiserate with the soul. So you want to get close to the soul. You want to attach into the spiritual world. So you take off your shoes and you cover your head. A man who can't perform chalitza, he's going to give his brother, who's in the spiritual world, a connection to this world by having a child with his wife. And he can't commiserate with the neshama of his brother, so he can't take off his shoe. He's too physical. So we take off his shoe for him. So all of that represents this concept of a person being an upside down tree. But when you want to maintain in this physical world a spiritual posture, you take off your shoes and cover your head. And this spiritual world, people take a walk on their heads because that's the root. Okay, so if you look at a tree, and in fact, the letters of Ace represent that. They look like that. If you ever saw an ayin in the Torah, how it looks with the three, what's it called, tagim, the crowns on it, it looks like a tree. It has two branches, and then a root that goes down, and the what's it called, things coming out of the branches. That's an ayin. And a tzaddik, sofis, the same thing. Two branches, little hairs on it, and a root that goes down. So the word Eitz itself looks like a tree, and it sounds like Ayin Tzaddik, look and you'll see the Tzaddik. If you look at a tree, and you understand what the roots are, and what the limbs are, and then you look at a human being, and you see a human being whose roots are up, because he's rooted in the spiritual world and his limbs are down because the physical world for him is a secondary thing, not the main thing, then you know what a tzaddik is. That's a tzaddik. A tzaddik is a person who's an upside down tree in this world. Okay. So that is the symbolism of the tree itself, the wood of the tree, vis-a-vis the tzaddik. How do you prepare for din. Nobody can merit total justice on his own. So how do we merit to be judged favorably on Rosh Hashanah? The answer is, we break ourselves and hand ourselves over totally to God and say, God, I may not deserve it on my own, and therefore I recognize that I'm a broken person, and I hand myself over to you for judgment. I accept your judgment. That's the only way to merit in judgment, to subjugate yourself totally to God with total submission and a total feeling of humility. So what's the symbolism of preparing for the Rosh Hashanah of judgment? We take a tree, which we said symbolizes a human being, a tzaddik. It's dry. We cut it into pieces, break it, and put it on the fire of the Mizbeach. That is the symbol of accepting God's judgment, and that's the way that you prepare to be able to merit that judgment. That's Tu B'Av. What's Tu B'Shvat? God, we said, however, wants us to be dynamic. He doesn't want that we should be destroyed because of din. So he added rachamim. He added mercy to this world. And Pesach, Nisan, is the time for miracles and mercy. In fact, the word Pesach, according to one opinion, is pass over. Pesach means to skip, to jump, to pass over. Okay, that's where the name Passover comes from. But Pesach has another meaning. The Targum, Yonkelus, Rashi brings it down, says Pesach means chos. Chos means to have mercy. God had mercy on the homes of the Jewish people and didn't smite their firstborn. So the word Pesach means mercy. So therefore, Pesach is the Rosh Hashanah of mercy. Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah of miracles, where God offers His mercy to us, His kindness to us. And that's Chodesh Ha'aviv, Aleph Beis, which represents mercy. So, how do you prepare for this mercy? The mercy is represented by something else, also a tree, but a different aspect of the tree. Tu B'Shvat is called Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos. The Ilan is also a tree, but it more represents the fruit-giving power of the tree. Because Ilanos are fruit trees. And even though the Gemara speaks about Ilanei Srak, Ilanos that don't bear fruit, the same Gemara says that when Mashiach comes, those same trees will bear fruit. They are potentially fruit-bearing trees, except in this world they don't bear that fruit. So they're Ilanei Srak. They're Ilanos that have the potential for fruit, but in this world they're Srak. The word Ilan, I think, also hints to this idea. If you have the word Ilan, okay, it would be better if we had a blackboard here, but we don't. So picture this in your mind. Take the Aleph away from Ilan and put it in your pocket. What are you left with? Yud, Lamed, Nun. Add those letters together. Yud is 10. Lamed is 30. Is 40. Nun is 50. 90. Excellent. 90. What letter is 90? Tzadik. Now take the Aleph out of your pocket and put it back with the Yud, Lamed, Nun combined to make Tzadik. What word do you have? Aleph, Tzadik. H. Except without an I in. With an Aleph. You have an H with an Aleph. No? You with me?
No.
No? If you take the Aleph away from Ilan, you're left with three letters. Yud, Lamed, Nun. Those three letters equal 90. 90 is a Tzadik. Okay, now change the Yud, Lamed, Nun, therefore, into a Tzadik. Take the Aleph back and put it next to the Tzadik, and you have the word H with an Aleph. What is the word?
Right.
No, it means something. It's still the same word H, except instead of an ayin, it's an Aleph. What does the word Aleph mean? To learn. Aleph, Yolif, right? Alephcha. Aleph means to learn. To teach, to learn. So we had before the ayin Tzadik means look and you'll see a Tzadik. Now we have Aleph Tzadik, learn and you'll see a tzaddik. You'll learn about the tree and you'll understand the tzaddik. Now, how does that work? The Elon is the fruit-giving tree. If you learn about the fruit, you'll understand what a tzaddik is. How does that work? Works like this. Fruit is a symbol of the world to come. How so? The Meiri says that Olam Haba is the pre of Olam Hazeh. It's the fruit. Here you plant the seeds, and there you reap the fruit. Okay, this explains a medrash that when Avraham Avinu, before he was given the command Lech Lecha, he went looking on a pilot trip all over the world for a place suitable to live, and hopefully if he'd have children, to bring up his children. It says he came to Aram Naharayim and he saw a bunch of goyim, idol worshippers, eating and drinking and partying, and he said, Rabbanu Shalom, please, I don't want this land to live in or to bring up my children. Then he came to Eretz Yisrael and he saw a bunch of idol worshippers planting, plowing, and harvesting. He said, God, if you're going to give me a land, give me this one. Now, on the surface, a little difficult to understand what was the difference between a bunch of idol worshippers partying or a bunch of idol worshippers planting, plowing, and harvesting. I mean, the goal of Yiddishkeit is not to be farmers, right? But Avraham Avinu said, wow, this place is conducive for farmers. This is the place I want my children to grow up. I live on a moshav, but that's not, you know, it's good for the JNF, but what in the world, you know, did Avraham see that he was so impressed with? The answer is, the kitzur, there are two philosophies of life. There's a philosophy of life that basically is associated with Esav. Esav means asui, finished. Esav was a hunter. That philosophy is immediate gratification. I want to enjoy this world now. I don't want to put any effort. The less effort, the more enjoyment, the better it is. That philosophy says that if you could have one of these remote control devices that not only control your television set with 100 cable, you know, channels, so you can sit there forever and never get bored, or always get bored, whatever it may be. And it also controls your refrigerator, your microwave, and there's a little robot cart that comes. You don't have to get up. You don't have to move. You can sit there for the rest of your life, eat, drink, do whatever you have to do, and watch the television and be, what's it called, even buy whatever you have to do over the internet and have it delivered to your door. And even if you don't have to put the food in your mouth, because that takes some effort. So you have this robot arm just stuffing it in your face. That would be the ideal pleasure of this world. That's a hunter. A hunter doesn't want to know from this animal until it's able to give him pleasure, goes into the forest, kills it, and eats it. That's Esav. Yaakov was a shepherd. A shepherd raises an animal and can't give him any benefit for a future benefit. Yaakov means the Hoya Ekev. What's going to be in the end? A Torah philosophy is this world is the place to put in effort. The rewards come in the next world. A secular philosophy is enjoy yourself here, immediate gratification. So therefore, fruit represents a Torah hashkafa of the world. And that's the difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. Chutz La'aretz is very conducive to a secular philosophy of immediate gratification. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Enjoy yourself while you can. No thought of the future. And that does not mean that you can't live a fine Torah existence in Chutz La'aretz. You can. There's beautiful communities in Chutz La'aretz. But you have to fight against the environmental influence. The environment in Chutz La'aretz influences you to this kind of philosophy. It's a fight. And we'll see that it has its toll even amongst from people. Here in Eretz Yisrael, the environment is conducive. That's what Avraham Avinu saw, to plowing, planting, harvesting, putting in effort now for the future. So by the goyim it was for the future harvest. By us it's for the future Olam Haba. That's what Avraham Avinu saw. And you can live a very fine secular existence for immediate gratification in this country. But you have to fight against the environment. There, to live the right life, you have to fight against the environment. Here, to live the wrong life, you have to fight against the environment. And the greatest proof I had to that, not really proof, it's not like such a great proof, but it's an interesting note. Many years ago, I also had to travel to Chutz Laretz one day. But that day, there was the Shavua HaSefer. Though back then, it was only 1 week. Now it's already Shana HaSefer, I think. They've expanded it to a month, and now it's a year. I don't think anything. And they used to have the Shavua HaSefer in Gan HaPa'amon. Those people remember that?
Yeah.
And it was mamash a night out. People would bring their families. All the publishers would bring their new books, svarim, whatever, spread them out on tables, and people would spend the night walking around looking at svarim or books on tables. Even secular Israelis. So they looked at books. Some of those books maybe you shouldn't look at, but in any case, but that's what interested them, looking at books. And they brought the children, and they had cotton candy, and it was a night out with the family. So I remember taking my family to Shavua Sefer in Gan HaPa'amon, and that night I had a 1 o'clock flight to the States, so we left there 9 whatever, got home, and I went from there right to the airport. I get to America early in the morning, the next morning, and the person who meets me at the plane says, there's something going on today in Javits Convention Center, which maybe you'd be interested in. So what is that? He said, the Kosher Food Fest. What's that? So all the producers of kosher food bring their latest products to Javits Convention Center, put them out on tables, and people walk around and taste, look, whatever, at all this food. I didn't end up going. Not that I have anything against food or kosher food, but it just hit me. I just left Eretz Yisrael, where a bunch of people, even not religious people, were walking around tables with svarim on them. And now in America, same thing, people walking around tables, and all of them are from. And they're walking around tables looking at food. There's got to be a message over here of what the difference is. And again, it's not that there's something wrong with kosher food, it's fine, but what's the focus? What are you focusing on? And then I saw in the newspaper, one of the Jewish papers, they had a 24-hour hotline for kashrus. Now I understand maybe a 24-hour hotline for Lashon Hara. You wake up in the middle of the night, you want to say something not nice to your husband, right? You have to call the number to find out if it's Lashon Hara. But why would you need a 24-hour hotline for kashrus? So you wake up 3 o'clock in the morning, you don't know if this thing has a good answer, wait till 8 o'clock in the morning, call your rabbi. You don't have to eat it at 3 o'clock in the morning. But the focus is, I got to know now if it's kosher, because I got to eat it now. So Chutz La'aretz is conducive for now. And Eretz Yisrael is more conducive. Even the Chalutzim, not just the Goy, even Jews who weren't from, came to Eretz Yisrael. They didn't look to get immediate benefit. They drained the swamps, and all the purpose was for the next generation, 2 generations. You see that the land itself, even for non-from people, somehow has, it's conducive for this kind of philosophy. So that's the philosophy of the fruit. So if you learn about the concept of fruit, you will be able to understand what a tzaddik is. So Tu B'Shvat, we prepare ourselves for the rachamim. Rachamim you get if you produce fruit. Now one more point. Let me finish it. Let's go back to the word Elam. Take apart the letters. Instead of Aleph Tzaddik, go back to Aleph Yud Lamed Nun. Elam. The Elam, we said, represents this concept of fruit. And if you learn about the fruit, you'll understand what a tzaddik is, like we explained. The fruit in Eretz Yisrael helps us to learn this lesson. Because God gave us mitzvahs to do with the fruit. Basically, 4 categories of mitzvahs. There's the mitzvah of firsts. You give the first to God. Bikurin, Truma, Chala, they're all called first. Then there's the mitzvah of tenths. You give the tenth. Maiser, Maiser Sheni, Maiser Risha, the tenth. you give to the Kohen, you give to God. So there's the first and the tenth. And then there's Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni is you bring it to Yerushalayim and eat it there. So you will be influenced by the environment of Yerushalayim. You learn how to fear God by seeing the Kohanim and the Sanhedrin. It says by Maaser Sheni l'man tilmad l'yiras Hashem Elokecha. You'll learn how to fear God. That's Maaser Sheni. And then there's Maaser Ani. You give Maaser to the Aniyim, because it's not just you that has to learn this lesson. You have to share it with other people too. Those are the four mitzvahs we do at Fruit to help us learn the lesson of this philosophy of putting effort now for the future for Olam Haba. How do we learn that lesson? First, you dedicate everything the first to God. That the major purpose of everything is spiritual. You take the first and you set the pattern for everything that's to come afterwards. The main thing is spiritual. Give it away to the Kohen. Give it for spiritual purposes. Then you give the tenth to God. Why? Because the tenth represents the goal, the tachlis. Everything will eventually unite under God. That's the number 10. 10 is one, again, but one of many things. 1, 10, plus 0. Up until 10, all the integers are separate. 10 unites them all the 9, into 1 10, and now you build on that. Achadisre, Shtemesre, you maintain the 10. Or in a decimal system, it's 10, and then 1 plus 10, right, and then 2 plus 10, 12 or whatever. So the 10 represents the goal. The goal is spiritual. The foundation is spiritual and the goal. Now in order to understand how to handle that, how to take that foundation and goal and use it, you have to learn. Learn how to take the physical things and use them for spiritual things. So you have to learn. And then you have to share it with others, because the lesson is not only for you, it's for others also. Now let's see what letters would represent these mitzvahs. You're giving the first to God. Bikurim, Truma, what letter would represent the first?
Aleph.
You're giving the tenth, Maaser Rishon, to God. What letter would represent that? Maaser Sheni you do in order to learn to fear God. What letter represents learning?
Lamed.
And then you give it to the Ani, to the person who's fallen, who can't support himself. What letter represents falling?
Nun.
Nefila. It also represents Ani, because it's a central letter of the word Ani, is a Nun. Now, what we have is the four lessons, the four kinds of mitzvahs that the fruit entails is Aleph, Yud, Lamed, Nun, which is Elan. So the Elan represents the fruit, which if you learn about the fruit, you'll learn about Olam Haba, but you'll also, in the letters of Elan, learn about all the mitzvahs that have to do with the fruit. The first, the tenth, the Maaser Sheni, which is learning, and the Maaser Ani, spells Elan. So by being involved in Elanos, on Tu B'Shvat, we prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan by understanding what fruit really is all about, what it signifies, and how we can be dynamic in this world, put in the effort in Olam Hazeh, so we reap the fruit of Olam Haba. And in Achanami, Hazorin B'dima. Sometimes you have to reap with tears. This world is not always immediate gratification. It's a lot of hard work, blood, sweat, and tears. But in the next world you reap the profits of what you put in the effort. In this world, in the next world you reap those profits, Barina, with tremendous simcha. So I hope now you have a little bit of a different idea of what Tu B'Shvat is all about. So when you eat that boxer, it'll have at least some time to it.